life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. I am Brian Smith, the man who has no idea where the last 2 weeks have gone, and this is episode 23 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. Once again, I'm joined by my co-host, the speedy and wonderful Anthony Askew.
Hello.
And tonight, we are joined by the man who loves unplanned stopovers in Leeds, Leon Everett.
Good evening.
Good evening. And we're here tonight to talk about Cowboy Bebop, the movie, Knocking on Heaven's Door. This sprung out of, well, a very old interview with Frank Black that I recalled. And I may be recalling it completely incorrectly. But he claimed that he never used to listen to new music. He only listened to music which was over a decade old, because by that time, history would have judged it to be good or not. So if people were still into it 10 years later, then it probably was worth what listening to. And I tried to apply that to my own life for a very brief period in 1999, but I do still like the thrill of the new. But I figured we'd do a similar thing about anime films and TV series and OAVs, and looking at them 10 years later, which we kind of did with the Foolie Cooley episode that Liam was on before. But I want to try and do one of these sort of every month. And the first one is Cowboy Bebop, Knocking on Heaven's Door. And before we start, it's just for anyone who doesn't know what Cowboy Bebop is, one of you two
Stop listening now, if you don't know what it is. Turn off, go to bed, watch it.
We're probably going to spoil the ending of the series and the film. It's been 10 years since the film, and even longer since the series, so I think we can probably spoil the hell out of it at this point. But for those who aren't afraid of spoilers and want to know what the show is, one of you two explain to the people at home.
Go ahead, Leon, because I need a drink of water, and I'll drink
a bit lazy. Basically, anime Firefly, to be horrific. But yeah, it's basically... I mean, the thing with Cowboy Bebop, it's not just one thing. It's really hard sort of just to pin it down. It does have that whole sort of thing with them being bounty hunters, but then it also has the weird sort of thing with them and people with hidden pasts and all that. But basically, the day-to-day of the show is a bunch of bounty hunters going planet to planet trying to make ends meet.
Yeah, it's also got a bit of Lupin the Third about it, particularly in sort of the character makeup. And it kind of... Yeah, you're right about it being a bit like Firefly, but it doesn't really... Apart from a few episodes, it's much more like a TV procedural.
Yeah.
Each episode stands alone. And I was thinking it would be... If it was on as a live-action show now, it'd be more like one of the sort of USA Network shows like Psych or Monk.
Yeah, Bird Notes, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Where, there's like individual stories, but you might occasionally get a spotlight on one of the characters to delve into their past briefly before moving on again. Yeah, so your main characters are Spike Spiegel, who's the lead and head bounty hunter. His partner, Jet Black, who's a former cop. And then they pick up along the way Ayn, a dog with a computer-like brain.
Is it a corgi? Have we mentioned this before?
Yeah, he's a corgi. Yeah, yeah, he's yeah. Faye Valentine, who is a woman who's with a severe gambling habit and is a lot older than she looks.
And she manages to pull off the most kind of bizarre outfit in the show. Everybody else kind of dresses relatively normal in comparison. But she pulls it off. Just look pretty sexy in it, if I must say.
And a young tomboy hacker called Edward. He's got a really ridiculously long name, which doesn't spring off the top of my head at this moment.
No, Edward Wong Howe Peppaloo Tefusky the Fourth.
There you go.
And so they had 26 episodes of a TV show, which, I don't know, how did you guys see the TV show originally?
I caught it on CNX, Cartoon Network Extreme, originally. I think it used to be on at either 9 p.m. or 9:30, so it was borderline bedtime for me, because obviously at the time I was pretty young at the time, I was still at school, so, but yeah, that's how I caught it.
For me, I'd heard about it for years and years, and I can't remember exactly how I'd seen bits and pieces of episodes, but I did watch it in its entirety on CNX, like Esku.
I think I saw it, well, I think first saw it in, because it was around the time when I was buying New Type, and this other magazine, which I think was called Anime X, Japanese anime magazine, and that was all over Cowboy Bebop like a rash, that one was. And so I think I saw artwork from it before I actually saw the show. And I was like, oh, I like the look of that. That looks pretty great. I'm going to try and see that when I get a chance. And I think it played at the 1999 Minami. They might have shown a few episodes of it.
Good reception, I take it.
Yeah, I remember that Minami, I remember being pretty excited about, if I remember correctly. Because I think it had that. It had Serial Experiments Lane. And I think that was when they showed Perfect Blue as well. So I think I came back from that being pretty hyped up for the state of anime at the time. And I was like, I'm going to buy these as soon as they come out. And so I think I bought the VHS of about the first four volumes. And then I swapped them for DVDs in 2001. Buying them on DVD before I'd even got a DVD player.
That's dedication.
Dedication. Yeah, import DVDs before I got any, let alone a multi-region DVD player. I haven't got a DVD player at all at that point.
This is the same thing's happened with your Blu-ray purchase as
it
well.
It did, yes.
What's next that you're going to buy in the wrong order? UMDs may come back, I don't know.
Oh god. God. UMDs. When they came around, I used to work at Videolog and all of a sudden we had to like redo our database and put all these UMDs in, and we're like, oh crikey, why are we doing this? I'm sure Sony must have been subsidized it, because there was like labels who were putting out UMDs, and you think, you must barely sell any DVDs. What hope do you have with UMDs?
Oh, poor UMD. Rest in peace.
Nah, they were never meant to live, so not poor though.
True.
Wasted a lot of my bloody time, though.
Hey, you got paid for it?
I did get paid for it, but it was, it was a lot of head shaking. I mean, even at the time, we didn't think Blu-rays were going to take off after that point, because it was like, once we heard Blu-rays were coming along, it's like, oh, is this going to be UMDs all over again? That and, oh, the other thing was DVD board games, or DVD games. That was another big thing around the same time.
What? Like DVD quizzes and stuff.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
They're terrible.
Well, I guess they were. But they were really popular around the same time UMDs came out. I remember that. Because I remember seeing loads of them in the HMV in Stansted Airport. And also when I flew over to Dublin around the same time. It was UMDs and DVD games all over the place. Anyway, we're digressing. This is Pogs all over again.
It is Pogs, yeah.
So the other thing. So, what were your favourite episodes?
Oh god, that is a hard one. The opening episode's got to be there. Has to be there, just because obviously it sets you up, and it's just awesome.
Asteroid Blues.
Yeah. I do like the one where Ed's introduced. Or they meet Ed's father?
Oh, that's much later.
I'm just throwing stuff out in the air here, so no order.
For myself, I'll probably say, I'll probably mention three episodes that just popped in my head. That's Toys in the Attic, you know, the one with the
the fridge.
Yeah, the one with the fridge. I'd probably say Ballad of Fallen Angels.
Oh, yes, of course.
Stuff with Vicious in the Church. The one of the kid, I think it's Sympathy for the Devil.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
I was never fond of that episode that much, you know.
These are all completely different episodes to the ones I've written down, which was, I basically did it from memory. I thought, which ones do I remember that I really liked? Because I've not watched it for quite a while. Though I've watched it more recently than I had done the film.
It's got to have the one with Cowboy Andy in as well.
Yeah, that was one of mine.
Oh, yeah.
Which is...
If I had a top five, that would be there as well.
Yeah, that's, which one's that, what's that one called? That's Cowboy Funk, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite late, isn't it? Episode 21. 22
or something?
22, yeah, 22. Yeah, I believe,
oh,
yeah.
Hang on.
The film apparently takes place after that and before 23.
Yeah.
That's what they say. But yeah, so that one, episode 2, Stray Dog Strut, where Iron's introduced, because I like an episode, I like an anime with a good chase, and that pretty much is a chase all the way through the episode. Where they're chasing after the corgi.
Is that the one with, yeah, it is, with Abdul Hakim.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. What else do I got? Oh, Mushroom Samba.
Ha! Yes, yes.
Which is a theme of hallucinations that seems to appear in, because there's hallucinations in Mushroom Samba, there's hallucinations in the film, and then there's the episode of Samurai Champloo, which also involves hallucinations, so you do have to wonder about Watanabe, if that these themes keep on cropping up in his works.
Surely you've got everybody's got the finale on the list as well.
No, I haven't. My other one was Pierrot Le Fou.
Damn! How did I forget that?
Basically an episode of Batman, the animated series, but with the Cowboy Bebop characters instead.
The scenes in the theme park and that are fantastic.
Yeah.
Love that. Which is pretty hallucinogenic in a sense. It's pretty bizarre. Because it's got all these crazy visuals and things flying around. I've never been to a theme park like that. Mind you, I'm Frank the Theme Park, so... maybe lots changed since I was first.
Too much Scooby Doo as a kid.
maybe.
Yes, I'm probably going to go back and watch all the episodes again now after this point, because it's like because I did it from memory and I looked at the list and I was like, I think that's a good one.
That's what I really find it hard to like pick out particular episodes because. I don't know, I usually think of it as being... I think of them more as chapters of the one story, just because the many times I've watched it has been in marathon sessions.
Yeah, so it kind of blurs into one.
And there are different things I like about certain episodes.
Mm. Yeah, it's been a while since I've marathoned any show.
See, I've only got the original DVD release, meaning it's not remastered. I would like to see it. I know somebody who's got it who lives close, so I might have to... nab that, watch it again, without a doubt.
Yeah, the remastered one is a lot, it's, I wouldn't say a lot better, it's just very, very nice to watch.
Mm. Yeah, that's a series, what about the movie?
So the movie.
Unless you want to talk about Pogs, Leon, do you?
There was something else I wanted to talk about, is did you, either of you ever play any of the, there was a PS1 game and a PS2 game?
No, I missed those.
No.
Yeah.
I remember them being out, I just never got a chance to play them.
Yeah, so I used to see the PS1 game in the computer exchange in Birmingham.
Was that, on the cover, was that Spike stood next to the swordfish or whatever the ship's called?
I think so, yeah, because it was very much, it was just like a spaceship piloting game. Right. I don't know what the PS2 one was like. Did you either of you read the manga at all?
No. I remember seeing it at cons, and I flicked through it, and
I've read one in a shop before. Like,
it's not a library, Leon.
But I didn't get too far into it. It was one of those things where I always thought, like, someday I'll just get it and read it up.
And now it's probably a print because it was Tokyo Pop, wasn't it? So gone. And. I didn't know. I bought the original soundtrack, though, as sort of the one bit of merchandise. And I think I've heard because they did a remix CD as well, didn't they?
Mm.
I think mainly British DJs, if I remember correctly.
I'm not quite sure, to be honest.
No, it was a big thing. It might tell me. Oh, blimey, there was loads. So there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 soundtrack recordings.
Bloody hell.
Funny thing with those is that I'm sure I've heard the majority of them.
Yeah, I'm sure I've got them all somewhere.
Because, is the movie one called Future Blues? Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do have the majority of those.
Yeah, and there was also...
Best of album.
Yeah, it was Cowboy Bebop Remixes Music for Freelance was the one I was thinking of. So you've got Mr. Scruff, that was who I was thinking of as the British DJ who was...
I don't know much about British DJs, really.
Yeah, he was mainly... but here it says mainly... many from Ninja Tune, which probably cropped up in Hip Hop Connection at the time when I was... That would have coincided around the time I started reading Hip Hop Connection. Right, onto the movie then. As we said, the movie takes place between episode 22 and 23. There is an interview from, I can't remember which convention it was, sort of in 2002, where Watanabe mentions that it could also be a dream an extended dream sequence taking place in Spike's head. The general plot is there's this guy called Vincent Villaggio who, what's happened to him? He's been infected with nano...
Machines,
hasn't he? And he can't tell whether or not he's dead or alive. And so in order to find his... And he thinks he's in purgatory.
Yeah, and he is registered as being dead as well.
Yeah.
And so in order to determine how to get into heaven, he decides to kill a load of people.
It's the best way to do it, isn't it? That works.
Yeah.
And, Spike, Faye, Jet, and Ed all get involved in trying to bring him to justice and prevent him from infecting... are they on Mars in this episode? Are they back on Mars, if I'm correct?
I don't think... That's where Vincent's
from. The military, he was Martian military, but I don't think it's set on Mars.
Yeah, I couldn't get a grip of where it was set.
Because there's a lot of Martians.
Actually, no. It's the capital city of Mars, isn't it?
Aha, yeah.
Yeah, so it is, yes.
Yeah, because I didn't think we saw that many other...
No.
...locations. And he'd be in a war on Titan, I think, was where he...
Yeah, that's it, yeah. I should remember this better since I watched it today again.
But you've got to point out that the fact that Spike and everyone go after him is because of his, not for morals of saving the world as such, which do kind of come about, but because of his 300 or 3 million Wulong... 300 million Wulong reward, which is a lot in Cowboy Bebop terms.
Yes, until that comes along, they're planning on running away so they don't get killed. But, the poor state of food on their ship convinces them otherwise, which is... In most of the series, that tends to be the reason why they do things, is because they're hungry.
Yeah. Because it's just instant noodles.
Yeah, and so Vincent Villaggio is... Well, he's kind of... I mean, I would say he's kind of like Spike. He's...
He's got a good head of hair.
He's got a good head of hair. But obviously part of the point in the few episodes which do all tie together in the main series... is that Spike himself is in this point between life and death. He himself got pretty much killed or faked his death at one point, and now he can't go... In the same way that Vincent can't go back to his old life, Spike can't go back to his either.
Yeah.
But he, unlike Vincent, he's got people around him that supposedly make life a bit better for him. But I think... And you could see this as being a point at where has the episode's gone back to? Where the end of this episode, end of this film, you see Vincent realise that the only time he was truly alive was when he was with the other main guest character from the film, who's this... She's a colonel, isn't she? Elektra?
Yeah.
She was part of the same team, you presume, yeah. Team 7.
Yeah.
And she's involved in trying to track down the nanomachines. That was when he was with her, and obviously, in similar, Spike kind of feels like he was only alive when he was with the character of Julia in the series. But if he goes back to Julia, then he's likely to suffer the same fate as Vincent.
Tragic.
It is. I was just thinking that was moment silence for love.
It was a moment of silence to let one of you two speak.
See, I read because I got a lot of trivia for this, that the character Elektra was based on the actress Gina Gershon. And I did a little image search, and I guess they look the same.
I can definitely see that, just from memory. I definitely see that.
Mm. Yes. So you think they'd been watching... I was thinking of... Isn't she in the Wachowski Brothers debut film?
Bound.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would make sense, I suppose, yeah. And she's an attractive lady, so why not base a female character on her?
Yes, and Vincent Villaggio is based on Bob Dylan, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I think the picture of him as a younger man, when he hasn't grown the beard and hasn't got long hair, is more obviously Bob Dylan-y.
Yeah. And that sort of ties in with the title, doesn't it?
Now, I swear when he's dressed up as a warlock, he's dressed as somebody else, and it's been bothering me since I rewatched the movie as to who he's dressed up as.
I love that costume. It looks so cool when he puts on the big hat. I like that.
I'm sure I've seen another musician dressed like that. It's like nagging away at my brain, but I'm sure it won't appear during this episode, so let's leave it at that, otherwise I'll be bothering myself.
But I never liked that Elektra. I'll say that out now. She was just, I don't know.
What was your main issue?
Well, everyone seems to think I'm a bit of a sexist these days with some of the opinions I've came out with on here. But I'm not. I'm really not. But I don't know. I just felt she was just thrown in. I don't know why she needs to have such a big part. I'd rather just see blokes fighting than... Because I do like that first scene when you see her meet Spike. Well, that potentially the second time they've met, because... Doesn't he bump into her in the Moroccan street with the veil? Is that meant to be her?
Yeah, I think it is.
I think it's hinted at that because he does say that we've met before. But I do like that little fight scene when he's got the little bit of dialogue about he likes a girl that can kick his ass, which is true for most men. True for most men.
That was a really good fight scene. Like all the fight scenes in the film, to be fair.
Yeah, definitely.
They're good, but this is my one critique of when they suddenly go into the super realistic movement for the fight scenes, because isn't the one on the monorail, if you're searching Cowboy Bebop and Naruto, you'll see loads of people complaining that they copied that from Cowboy Bebop, a fight scene in Naruto from Cowboy Bebop, when actually they probably both just copied it from a particular Bruce Lee film.
Yeah.
Mm.
And because there's a bunch of cartoonish movement, particularly Ed, who's got
no joints in his body.
Yeah. Tube arms going on. But also things like Spike's feet. The design of Spike's feet are totally cartoony. They're basically Lupin's feet. And it's like,
I always notice that they have that sort of, that look.
Yeah. Like two different sized sort of orbs stuck together, like proper cartoony. And yeah, it gets not so much in the monorail, that looks okay, but the final fight scene does suddenly look, oh, we're just copying real humans' movements.
and you don't think that works with that kind of proportionary of his feet and stuff?
I think they just about get away with it, just because it's just a bit obvious when the rest of the movement isn't like that. Mm. That it's suddenly going, oh, hang on. I mean, they kind of cover it by the fact that he's using a particular martial arts technique.
Which is apparently Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do, for those who don't know. But speaking of his feet and stuff, I always laugh, you know, in like the opening credits with the Ask DNA, that song and all that stuff. And like everyone looks like really kind of realistic in terms of the artwork and stuff. And then you see Spike's boot stub out a cigarette. It always makes me chuckle that. Like, it's just like, what? Who the hell's that? But obviously, you're watching Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, I remember disliking that a lot more the first time I saw it. I mean, the first time I saw the film, I didn't like it all that much. In part, I'm trying to think, it was either 2002 or 2003, and it was at Minami again. And the problem I had with it then is I'd just come off quite recently from seeing the series, obviously, and I was like, well, nothing's at risk here, because I know none of the main characters are a risk.
There's a spoiler there.
Because there's another four episodes after this takes place.
Exactly, exactly.
Oh, well, yes, we're not, we said we're going to spoil stuff. Yes, so obviously Spike dies at the end of the series. So he isn't going to die at this point. Or he doesn't die. I think he, I mean, you could argue that...
It's left ambiguous.
Yeah, again, it's like that he's been in purgatory again. He doesn't get to die in the series. He's just left at the point where he might live or he might die.
You can make up your own mind. I like to think he died. I love Spike Spiegel. He's one of my all-time favourite characters. But I like to think he died. Sorry, Spike, if you're listening. But you're not, because you're dead. And you're not, because you're not real. But
he's dead. He's dead in the future. He might find the MP3.
I might find a young boy and
have an entire episode trying to find something to play it on.
Yeah, I do like Spike's feet. But see, I love those opening credits.
Yeah, I love them now. But at the time,
I'm surprised that you didn't like them. I'm surprised. I don't know. Great music, and it just.
Yeah, I think at the very time cool. I was like, why is this done in this different style to the rest of the cartoon? But yeah, I love them now. I quite like them. And the guy who did that bit of animation has got a film coming out, which, Gordon Bennett, it's something Momo is in the title. It didn't get great reviews at the Toronto Festival, but I'm kind of hoping it appears at the Leeds Festival.
Was he one of the two, I think one of the two guest directors who did?
Yeah.
The other guy did the High Noon segment with Bob and Jet.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't think I've ever seen High Noon, but after rewatching the Knocking on Heaven's Door again, I watched that bit. I was like, oh, I would really like to see that. And I would also like to see a full anime version of it as well. That'd be pretty fun.
It has been a while since I've watched High Noon.
Would you watch it in an anime form? In the style that's used in Knocking on Heaven's Door?
Yeah, of course, but they would have to change a few things. But yeah, it would be pretty good.
Like, add more giant robots.
Yeah,
more ninjas.
Enough. Yeah, there's not enough in the original High Noon. Only one giant
Only
robot.
One. Kill a bit of trivia, because I was telling Brian before I came on, I've got some glorious trivia. Apparently in the opening credits, the Ask DNA bit, which I'll mention again.
The VAs.
Yes, the English voice actors apparently get a little cameo, and which line is it of the song? But it's like the black guy with the headphones, then the woman taking a drink, then the guy doing the karate moves, that's like Jet's voice actor, Faye's voice actress, and Steve Blum, who was Spiegel. At first I thought, nah, I can't be right. That's just a rumour, that. But it kind of makes sense when you look at them, because I've Googled images of them as well. And it could be true. But I don't know whether it is.
That brings me on to the point of how I watched it. I watched it in the dub.
Oh.
And I always watch Cowboy Bebop in the dub, and rewatched the movie in the dub. And the first time I watched it was the dub as well. I've only watched it once in Japanese.
See,
you're one of those people.
With that. With the series, I'm a dub guy, but when it comes to the movie, because I originally had a very poor quality copy of it on a VCD. It was actually split over two VCDs. And this was obviously years ago. It was the only way
classic
I could see it.
Classic piracy.
It is classic piracy. We love it. It is Pirate Day, after all. and I've seen it on the Japanese dub. That's what I've known for the movie, so it was kind of strange watching it with the dub. Obviously, it works in both ways, because it's both really good, but... When did you watch it in, Brian, first? I presume Japanese.
With the series, yes, because it was VHS, so I hadn't got a choice. So I had to buy either the dub or the subtitled version, and I wasn't going to be buying the dub. So the first time I actually heard any of the dub actors was a couple of days ago, when I switched on the DVD and it started playing in the dub first.
That's your first time hearing it in English?
Yes.
Wow!
Well, any Cowboy Bebop or just the film?
Any Cowboy Bebop.
What?
That's incredible.
That is incredible. That's shocking. But well done for kind of avoiding it.
It only lasted about half an hour, and then I switched back to the subtitled version.
Whose voice don't you like? There must be someone who put you off.
Well, no, it was okay, but it was just sort of generally the general level of mediocrity that is in sort of anime voice dubs that aren't, haven't got enough money to hire better actors.
See, the thing I find is that the majority of anime that I watch is usually the subtitled version with the Japanese soundtrack, but there's certain shows, and part of it would be because maybe that was the first time I watched it in it, but it's not rarely, because there's things where that has been the case and I only watch the sub of it now. But Cowboy Bebop is one of those shows where I've just always preferred the dub. Maybe it's because of the setting of the world, or because I feel the characters' voices sort of suit them in the series, but I've always just preferred it in the dub.
I do like the English dub, but I think Spike's original voice is fantastic. I think it's hard to beat that, but Steve Blum comes very close, very, very close. But I do prefer his original voice. So there you go.
Yeah, on the sort of, you saw it first in English, and that's why, and you ended up preferring that. I had that with Tenchi Muyo, of all things, so. That was probably the last time I deliberately, and first and last time I deliberately bought stuff dubbed rather than subtitled. But often if it was a UK release, you had no choice on VHS. It was, I think until ADV came along, you were basically, apart from Akira, you were stuck with, Akira and the Animego stuff, you were kind of stuck with dubs.
I remember those days of VHS.
Having to rewind stuff. Ugh. Never mind the single tracks, just rewinding and, ugh. Awful.
And of course we were told that to subtitle a show costs more money than to dub it, because they wouldn't sell as many copies. Except now, of course, it's flipped, so you've got the really zealoty, fanatical dub fans who are the ones getting into huge arguments on forums when their favourite show doesn't get a dub because it's too expensive to dub things now. Which is always fun. Yeah, it's the dub lunatics are quite hilarious. And it's always the worst show as well. It's never a good show they're complaining that they haven't got a dub on. It's always some incredibly crummy, moe show.
I'll tell you a dub that I don't like. It kind of ties in with Cowboy Bebop as well. It's a Samurai Champloo dub.
I really
don't like the dub of that.
I hate that.
I've definitely never heard that.
I forget who does who from a lot of the things, but I don't like
Blum
it.
Blum does Mugen.
Oh, I know who the guy who does Jin is. It's a guy who does... Oh, what's his name? I'm sure it's a guy from Samurai, like Rurouni Kenshin. I forget his name now. But yeah, I hate that voice for Jin. It's too deep and too manly. Jin needs to be a bit more feminine, I feel, anyway. Nah, don't like the dub for that. Get that out of there.
No, I've never.
Well, that's been on my chest for years. I want to get that off your chest.
It's Daniel Andrews' Mugen. Is that a pseudonym for Steve Blum, then? Is this one of these?
I'd imagine so.
I think it's possibly. Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is, yeah. And it's Kirk Thornton as Jin.
Check if he's the guy from Rurouni Kenshin, please. I'm going to look stupid if I'm wrong.
I think you're wrong.
Oh, seriously?
Oh, maybe not. I'm looking at... He's cast under various names.
Right.
He's split up here.
So I've usually got a pretty good ear when I've listened to something in a dub. I hear that voice again. I'm usually pretty good at...
He did the ADR script and the script editing for some Kenshin, and he was Ginjo, Heihachiro Sasaki, Saito, and...
Saito, that's the guy. That's the guy. I knew
there was lots of people in Rurouni Kenshin.
Mm-hmm. I knew that was him. So I don't look quite as stupid now. But...
He's also known as Ron Allen, Sparky Allen, and Sparky Thornton.
What would you choose to go by?
His real name is Sean Thornton.
I like Sparky.
Sparky, yeah.
I think we should all go to Deep Hole and get it done. Get it done. Bring it out to the den, make the brain budget.
It'll all be Sparky.
Oh, God.
So music.
Yes, the music. What have you got to say about the music?
Well, I really love Yoko Kanno's work with the Seatbelt, and I do enjoy other shows that she's worked on as well. Because she has quite a crazy, eclectic style that sort of covers a million and one genres. In the movie, I do like how it was used. It doesn't seem to be as fun, in a sense, music-wise, for the majority of the film, as you'd get in the series, but there are themes which have that, like you've got What Planet Is This near the end, which is really fun, crazy, big jazz-type song. But, as usual, it's just really good, really consistent.
Yeah, sorry, go on, Brian.
Yeah, that was something else, which I didn't remember liking it the first time I heard it. But yeah, I really enjoyed it this time round. I would have been a Kanno fan at the time, because I got into her via Vision of Escaflowne, I think. Yeah, that would be what I got via. And then sort of backtracked to Macross Plus, and then Bebop, I think, would be the next thing. I've backtracked at other points. Her stuff for Noise Man Sound Insect is pretty out there and great and spooky. But yeah, I'm trying to think. It's after this, I don't think I've paid much attention to what she's done since. Apart from Wolf's Rain, I think her music was probably the only good thing about that in retrospect.
Does she do the intro theme, I take it?
Yeah.
Kind of like that. It's all right.
But yeah, I didn't really like Standalone Complex. I never really listened to the music. I mean, that's...
I love the music in that.
That's, I mean, I don't know about the music, because I didn't like the show, so...
Thank goodness. I feel I'm the only person who couldn't get into that. I try to watch it, and people say, oh, how can you not like this? How can you not like that? I just don't. I don't know why. Maybe I'll try rewatching it, but I'm not the only one, Brian. Thanks. Because you love it, don't you, Leon?
Yeah, I do. I know a fair few people who are not big fans of it. Like, there's people who I know who like the movies, but they hate Standalone Complex, but I'm not one of them.
I think the movies are pretty good, but just the series, I don't know, it just seemed a bit boring.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, I'm told the second series isn't quite so bad. But yeah, at least the first few episodes of the original Standalone Complex just bored me, so I never watched the rest of it. And then what else has he done recently? Oh, Genius Party, which I've got to watch, which I just imported from Australia.
How much did that set you back?
Ooh, let me just tell you, and you might be horrified, or you might be...
I'm bracing myself.
It was a lot of Australian dollars, I know that, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was much in English money. I think it came to about... Oh, receipt for my payment. Here we go. So, with the postage, it came to $59.34.
Right, I thought you were going to say pounds. Yeah,
well, yeah, the pounds is pretty bad. The pounds is £38.61.
Jesus. And that's just for a one... It's one... Is it a film?
No, it's two films.
Two films, right.
Yes, but it was a box set. It was Genius Party and Genius Party Beyond.
Is that Blu-ray or regular DVD?
Regular DVD.
Oh! You were burnt there, Brian. But if you want
it... I'd have been burnt harder if I'd imported the Japanese version, so... It would have cost me, probably... Well, I don't know if they've done a box set of it yet, so... If they haven't done a box set, it would probably cost me 160 quid or something ridiculous
Jesus
like that.
Jesus Christ. Wow.
And the postage would have been... But the postage was really cheap. It was.
It wants to be for the price.
It was only $7. And he got here like in less than 2 weeks, so it wasn't too bad. But there's so many Australian stuff I need to order.
Why do they... In fact, speaking of Australia, my Neon Genesis Evangelion box set is from Australia. So there you go. I don't know why I got it from... I'm sure it was really cheap at the time. So it's quite the reverse of why of yours. But yeah.
But yeah, that's better than... It was in two parts, and they just brought out a box set, so I picked up both of them. I've got Mind Game I need to order. What else have they got out there, which they haven't got here? Kyber is out on DVD in Australia.
I hear good things about that. I've got it ready to watch, but I haven't started yet.
The first half of Deno Coil's just come out, or is about to come out. And so I need to get Mind Game as well.
Mm. So why did the Aussies get it so early?
Well, because different people license different things, so...
Yeah.
Apart from Mind Game, that's all via Siren Visual, who aren't Mad Men, so MVM aren't likely to, or Manga aren't likely to release any of the stuff, because Siren don't have a deal with anybody at the moment in the UK to...
Get stuff here.
Cross-import or cross-release. Anyway, back to Cowboy Bebop.
Yep.
Pogman all over again.
I know.
By the way, yeah, we didn't mention that. The character we couldn't think of in last episode was Pogman. Pogman.
Yeah, it's a pretty obvious name. Leon will not know what this is about. But we'll not spoil it. Well, it's not really a spoiler, but... did you collect... Oh, I'm not going to get into Pogs. Nah,
we're not going to start a Pogcast.
I'm sure there's already one out there. I'm 100%.
Right, yeah, the other stuff I've got notes on is, the release date, it kind of had a bit, I don't know if this affected it at all, but it did have the unfortunate timing of coming out 10 days before September the 11th in Japan, which when involves terrorist attacks, and there's also appears to be a space Twin Towers makes an appearance during the film. You're kind of like, oh, okay, that might also tinted the viewing of it, watching it. I can't figure out whether I watched it in 2002 or 2003. I was trying to look up old Minami reports, but I couldn't find any details on them. Oh, the big thing which struck me is one thing which makes it really good is just the lusciousness of all the backgrounds.
Oh, yes.
Well done.
I think the first time you really notice it, I think, is in the scene early on in the... the corner shop.
The Moroccan streets. Oh, no, the robbery.
Yeah, the robbery in the shop, because the colours really pop and the detail. And the other thing is, it's lazier or a cheaper film would only, like, use one background for a scene, whereas they've got loads of different angles for different locations in here. Like, even Vincent's room, where he's got... Faye tied up for a good portion of the film.
Yeah.
They switch between loads of different angles of the room and light and shadow.
Oh, that's what I've got written down, the shadow and lighting. Oh, it's glorious. Especially the bit on the train. I just think it works so well as, like, the train's going underneath the... When the trains cross and... Oh, it's brilliant. Brilliant stuff. Brilliant.
Yeah, because there's a lot of things like that. Where, like, say the bit where Spike is chasing Vincent to the subway, and there's just a lot of dynamic sort of camera angles and movement where they could have cut corners very easily, but they just go to show off, as to say, check
look
this
what
out.
We do, yeah.
Especially the bits with when they're flying around, the flying chases, like the bit near the end, that's really good as well.
What, like the final dogfight kind of thing?
Yeah, and you've got, like, the background, the sea, the bridges, all that.
Yeah. See, after going to Brian's panel, I never thought how much I appreciated how good missiles can look. But I think I like the missiles in Knocking on Heaven's Door as well. Like, all that bit in the dogfight, it's good.
Oh, yeah.
All the smoke and the explosions and, you know, we've all seen it. And if you haven't...
Yeah, and the colours really pop as well. That's the thing I liked about the early shop scene, is it really looked like a shop in that you've got all these garish colours of the products on the shelves.
Mm.
Just looking at...
Like, the effect of using a wide-angle lens as well. You see, like, curvature. The top looking down shot, bird's eye view, I guess, if a bird was in a shop. But, and I thought, I love when they do that in... It's only really anime that I see that in, and I love when they do it. Because it seems like, just rewatching it today, and obviously a lot of my favourite shows and films, it seems that the ones I seem to enjoy the most visually are the ones which are very cinematic, where they seem to have been storyboarded in the same way like a film would be in some sort of way.
Well, yeah, one would hope.
Yeah.
They would be doing proper storyboards. If it's a good animation, then they should do sort of work more from the storyboards than the scripts. Just looking at Shihoku Nakayama did the colour design, and they also worked on... the TV series and more recent stuff. The prototype episode of Halo Legends. I can't remember which one that was.
Oh, God. That was only weeks ago.
Go back to that episode and listen and find out whether we liked it or not. They did Aura and High School Host Club, which has another show with great colour design on it. Sword of the Stranger, Soul Eater, another show with great colour design. Yeah, so in general, they're really good at that job. But yeah, there's nothing on Anime News Network as to who actually did the background art, unless I'm missing the job description under something else. But there's an awful lot of key animators, which is also normally a good sign. Anything else I wanted to add? There's a scene... Oh, the other thing which struck me is there's a scene where they raid a water plant.
Yeah.
Which just seemed to be them to show off, look at all these mechanical designs we've done, and here we are. Here's a chance to show them all off, because the actual scene doesn't have much bearing on the plot at all.
Not really, no.
Because they sent all this military hardware into something where there's nothing there. it's a pretty great scene. You get to see all these vehicles moving around and people in military outfits and loads of shots of guns, so it looked like... Yeah, now it's time to draw a bunch of...
And choral, and like very choral music.
Yeah. Oh. And they just find a dummy with a note saying they've been tricked.
Trick or treat.
What other things do I like? Oh, I liked the ongoing... is it Shogi they're playing? Or Shogi?
Yeah, yeah.
Where Iron keeps on wanting to help out.
Oh, I love Iron. Iron, he's just such a... cute character. Well, cute dog, obviously. Yeah, I like the interaction with him and Jet, because I don't know, you kind of feel sorry for Jet, you know, I mean, he's left alone and stuff, and he's only companions, it's his man's dog. Perhaps I'm overreading it, but...
And the dog might be smarter than he is as well, which is the other.
Yes, yeah, true. Oh, I feel I've got to mention the Groucho Marx looking guy in the opening credits. Remember the Groucho Marx guy?
Yeah, I
like him. Because I'm a big fan of the Marx Brothers, so I like him.
So anything else you want to mention before we wrap up?
Quickly through my notes. Watanabe, can you believe he debuted, like, directorial debut was on Macross Plus?
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing. That's like the Takeshi Koike thing with Redline all over again. What a lucky bugger. Once again, imagine debuting your directorial debut on Macross Plus. Bloody hell. My directorial debut is one of my terrible student films. Doesn't quite compare.
I'm sure he probably had terrible student films as well.
No, he probably didn't.
What was the last big thing? He did the music for Michiko to Hatchin, which that is really odd that show's not been licensed, because it's pretty great and it would appeal to the Cowboy Bebop fan and the Samurai Champloo fan. Yeah, I think the last thing he did might have been the opening to Star Driver.
Ah, yes, I've got that written down, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. But in general, in terms of direction... Oh, and Baby Blue on Genius Party. Which is the thing that Yoko Kanno did the music for, so...
All these links.
Yes. I've not watched that yet. That's on... I think that's on... Is that part of Genius Party or Genius Party Beyond? I can't remember. I should really watch it and...
maybe do an episode...
Well, you'd have to watch it as well.
Yeah, I'm sure I can manage with all my free time. It's only running time 85 minutes.
But you haven't got £40 to spend on importing these DVDs.
I'll find it somehow. I'll rustle the money up.
I guess one last thing I'll say about the movie sort of extends to the series as well.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the reasons... One of the many reasons I love the whole world of Cowboy Bebop is because as an anime, it's pretty good how it's... I like how it's set... Obviously, it's set on different planets in the future, but it's in a world which is quite... not just multicultural, but quite worldwide. So it's not just a bunch of Japanese characters, but it's actually what would be Western characters if they were born on Earth... as well as people from all over, especially in the movie, there's a very big sort of Moroccan, sort of Arabic design of the parts of Mars that they go on to. But I do like the fact that it's, I don't know, it just seems what you'd, not what you'd expect the future to be, but I don't know, it's a different look of the future than what you'd usually get from a lot of anime set at this time.
Yes, I get what you're saying. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, and the other thing is, in the show, the people who've stayed behind on Earth are treated like mad people.
Yeah.
As if that was a crazy thing to do. And it is a pretty much crazy thing to do as well, as you learn when you watch the series, that you're basically putting your life at risk if you've stayed on Earth.
Yeah, you don't want it to rain.
No.
in terms of even just things like the music, obviously, that's very sort of grabbing bits from different cultures and into one nice mix. The character design is probably one of my favourite things about Cowboy Bebop as a whole, for every type of character. It's done in a way where it's not done as hyper-realistic, but it's done in a way that is everyone sort of looks human enough in that world. No one seems to be caricatured, and I really enjoy that. Apart from Ed, of course, who is the most anime-looking character on the show.
Well, I think Ed almost goes beyond anime and sort of, yeah, back to sort of Fleischer cartoon movements, because, yeah, she just, yeah, no joints, just all rubbery limbs.
Jumps in that vase, or far, sorry.
Yeah.
Vase?
I should have dubbed, man.
Yeah, Leon's been dubbed by an American.
Yeah, Americanized Leon, that's what it was
called.
So do you think it still holds up 10 years on?
I think it's better. I know it sounds totally ridiculous, but... Because when I first seen it, I was young at the time, and I was kind of... The fact that, oh, damn, a series that I really love has got a film. I'm going to love this. I know I am. And because I was really young at the time, I kind of... I was obviously going to love it, but after watching it since, and... Because I'm so used to seeing it in AMVs and stuff. I've edited with it myself. It kind of loses context. So now re-watching it with that context... I think there's a lot to appreciate, and I don't think it looks dated in the slightest. So, yeah, held up. It's holding its weight. Definitely.
I feel the same. I wasn't as young as SQ when he apparently first saw it. But just rewatching it today, there's a lot more to appreciate. I mean, I enjoyed it more than... you, Brack, on your first watch, but I would say just watching now, I think it's because I've just watched a lot more things since then, and it just gives me a greater appreciation for how this does what it does and how it does it well.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, I'm at least 5 years since I've watched any Cowboy Bebop, and so this was like a really good thing to watch, because I was like, oh, I really still do like Cowboy Bebop, and I also like this a lot more than I did with the weight of the series hanging over it as when I saw it particularly early on. One really obscure thing I really wanted to complain about is how bad the DVD artwork is for it.
Are you talking about the little lens flare?
The lens flare, the sort of vaguely, yeah, the sort of the city in the background, which doesn't look anything like the city in the film.
I've got the American version. Is the artwork same on the UK one?
It's Elektra with a gun in the
middle, with a gun, Faye on the right.
Yeah.
With a lens flare. Don't forget the lens flare.
What, the crotch lens flare?
Crotch lens flare, yeah.
And we got that sort of jet in the background on the right of Faye.
Yeah.
And, very pointless.
I thought you meant Jet, the character then. I was like squinting down, looking to see.
Yes, compared to like the original DVD casing for the series where it's done, is it Blue Note they're aping sort of the Blue Note record sleeves, which look great, and the DVDs, which look like LPs. It's like then you stick that by the side of it and you go, oh, cool.
That in a separate drawer or something.
Yeah, you're thinking, oh, maybe I should make my own sleeve for it so it looks fits in with the theme.
Oh, it is pretty bad.
Right, so all in all, big thumbs up to Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Yeah. 10 years later. Yeah, definitely.
Anything you want to plug, Leon, before we wrap up?
No, not at the moment. I'll probably have a list of stuff next time.
Okay, do you want to be followed on Twitter?
If they want.
Okay, your nemesis Yojimbo on Twitter. And,
one word, yeah.
I'll stick a link to that on the website. And talking to the website is awesome-engine.com. And you can also find us under Dynamite in the Brain on Facebook and on iTunes. And you can follow me on Twitter at awesome_engine. And Anthony, your usual plugs, please.
Ant Askew on Twitter as usual, and YouTube channel Seng808, TSENG 808.
You can see the
Koike endorsed Red Line Speed Racer video.
Yeah, that's
thought I'd drop that one in there. Check it out. That's it. And did you watch the end of the credits of the film? Which it has a bit of text. It says, "Are you living in the real world?"
Yeah.
Oh yes, I remember that bit. Yeah.
What do you make of that?
It seems to be an all too common theme of anime films, is people not being able to distinguish between the real world and fantasy. Except, of course, in this case, it was a character who thought the real world was his fantasy. Where often it seems to be the other way. But yeah, it just seemed like people do go to that theme a little too often in anime films. Probably not at the point this came out, but since then, I think there's been quite a few. I don't know what that says about people in Japan or generally people watching cartoons. But we know the difference, don't we? Even though some of us think that Spike's going to be listening to this episode at some point.
Well, see you later, Space Cowboys. I'm living the dream here. I'm going to go and check some Wulong rewards and stuff after this.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite.